Hi, I'm Frank Pitino, and I'm on the Ramble Redhead Show.
Hi, everybody. This is the Ramble Redhead Show, and I'd like to welcome you to today's episode. Today, we have a very special guest. His name is Frank, and we'll be explaining a little bit why Frank is on the program. But what I'd like to do is just go right into the interview and get started. And what I'd like to do is welcome Frank to the program. Hey, Frank, how are you?
I'm doing well, Tom.
Well, great. It's been a little bit of a challenge to get you on the program today with my technical things, but I just want to thank you so much for doing this, and I just want to let the listeners know how I came across you and a very good friend of mine by the name of Jonathan, who's been a new friend for me, and he had heard about my program, and he told me, well, I know somebody they think would be a great person to have on the show, and he mentioned you and of course, about your book, which we'll get into a little bit in a minute, but I was just wondering, can you do me a big favor? Could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how old you are and where you're from?
Sure. I'm from upstate New York. Went to Colgate University.
Okay.
High school teacher for a couple of years.
Right.
And after that, I went to work for the FBI. I was a special agent for the FBI from 1969 until 1990.
Wow. Okay, great. And so your whole growing up was, you know, you grew up in upstate New York, like you said. And I was just wondering, at the time, do you remember how old you were when you first had feelings about you being gay?
You know, growing up in the late 40s and 50s, early 60s,
mm-hmm.
it really wasn't a subject that was ever talked about.
Or, right.
You know, not on TV and all that. So, probably when I was a teenager, I started thinking a little bit about it. But, you know, I dated women or girls at the time. And you never know what other people are thinking about themselves and if your thoughts are the same as everyone else or different. So it was always kind of in the back of my mind. And looking back now, I realized I was gay. But at the time, I didn't quite realize it.
Okay, so obviously during high school and things like that, you never acted on it, right?
No, I didn't. I hated girls, and you know, was an athlete and a student leader, and all of that. No, I didn't really have any sexual experiences with other guys.
Okay, and so I was just curious, how old were you when you did have your first experience?
First experience I had was when I was 29 years old.
Okay.
I was dating women at the time. I had sexual experiences with women, and I was actually 29 when I first went out to really have my first experience with another guy. And it was kind of funny because it was mixed emotion.
Mm-hmm.
One, I really enjoyed it, but the other part of me thought about, you know, it was really bad, and if my employer, and I was an FBI agent at the time,
mm-hmm.
I'd been an agent for 5 years, and I knew full well if they ever found out that I would be fired.
Right.
And this was back in 1974.
Okay.
So it was really mixed emotions. I told myself I'd never do it again. It was a one-time experience, and but, you know, in time I did it again, and in time I enjoyed it more and more. At times I thought maybe I was bisexual because I was still dating women, and then eventually I realized I was gay and just accepted it and tried to go on with my life.
So how did you meet this other person?
I met him through an ad. In those days, people would put ads in the personals of a gay newspapers, and the publication was in Los Angeles. I was living in San Diego at the time.
Oh, okay.
So I wrote this guy a letter, and we exchanged letters, and then talked on the phone, and then we met up in Laguna Beach.
So wow.
That's the way people did it then, with letters and correspondence before the internet.
So there's no bar. They have very many gay bars then? Hello?
Yeah, I didn't hear your question.
Oh, we had a little blurb there. Did they have any gay bars at that time?
Yeah, there were gay bars in San Diego and Los Angeles, but I would never go because I was an FBI agent, and obviously
yeah.
I was fearful of losing my job if anybody ever spotted me in a gay bar. So
right.
I never went to a gay bar.
Right. So then you responded to an ad, and that's how you met the person. Was that how it always was for you at the very beginning then?
Yeah, at the beginning for the first number of years. Once in a while I'd meet somebody at the gym or running or something like that, but I was extremely closeted.
Right. And you had to be really careful.
Oh, yeah, for fear, you know, of getting fired, certainly.
Right. So that happened when you were about 29 years old. So obviously you said that when you did have that first experience that it really, you know, kind of, concerned you and felt like, okay, this is not going to happen again. You know, this is not who I am. And but then you said that you did, you know, then meet other people. So how did that make you feel after that? Did you finally get a little bit more comfortable with it?
Yeah, it took me a long time, Tom. As I said, I was dating women,
mm-hmm.
and then I would see a guy and kind of back and forth. And eventually, I just realized I was gay and stopped dating women. It was really unfair to them.
Right.
Some of them wanted to get married and all of that, and didn't understand why I didn't want to do that. And I think probably the turning point was I met a guy who was in the Navy, and we formed a relationship, but that was in 1982, so that was the last time I was with a woman.
Right. Now, was that Brian then?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the book, I call him Brian.
Right.
That wasn't his true name, but that's what I referred to.
Right. Well, I was just curious, why did you use the name Brian then? Did you just not want to out him at all then?
I just wanted to protect a lot of people in the book, unless they gave me their permission or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just used different names for them, just to protect their identity and their confidentiality of our relationship. So
right.
A lot of the names were changed, and the descriptions too of people.
Right.
Brian in the book was not out at the time that the book came out, so I didn't want to do anything that was going to jeopardize his identity and his future career.
Right. And I was just curious, how did the two of you meet? Was that through the personals then too?
No, we met at a party. I went to a party. I was with a woman at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we met in passing. And then she and I went out to a bar that was kind of a mixed bar, and we were out there dancing, and I ran into him again.
Oh, wow.
So I gave him my number, and then he called me. And, you know, he was in a similar situation as I was. He was in the Navy. You know, this was back in 1982, and was very closeted and fearful of losing his job. And so, you know, it was almost like a perfect fit between us.
Right.
Because we had a lot in common. He was a really nice guy.
Oh, cool.
And we were together for 8 years, but a lot of the time we were apart because he was in the Navy and he was overseas a lot. So
right.
It would be times 8-9 months we didn't see each other. And it was bad back then because there was no email.
Right.
So, you know, I'd write him a letter and he'd write me back, but we had to be very careful about what we said in the letter. Once in a while, he'd be overseas and he'd call me, but it sometimes would be 3 or 4 or 5 months.
Right. Well, the other thing is the other thing is also with you, because of your job, and you had to travel quite a bit as well. So, I mean, obviously that had a a big factor too. So I mean, and like you said, you had to be very careful about what you said and what was done, because you didn't want to get him in trouble, nor do you want to get you in trouble. So so that was very because I guess that's the reason why I wanted to have you on the program, because I wanted the younger people today, who are probably the bigger listeners of the program, is just to get appreciation for what you had to go through, and really appreciate the benefits that they have today, as far as the internet, as far as email, as far as the cell phones, things like that. So I mean, there's a lot of things that unfortunately you had to pay a very severe price in order to get the benefits that we have today. So I just want to thank you for your part, and reading your book was just amazing, and I really enjoyed it, and I want to get a little bit more into the actual story as we go on. But so I was just wondering, can you tell us what happened next then, during this part of the time?
Well, during the 80s, of course, I was working in the FBI, and Brian was coming and going, and 1988, mm-hmm. Brian was gone for quite a while, and so I responded to an ad in a local gay publication to meet someone.
Right.
And just to kind of summarize, which is pretty much a pretty involved situation, I never met the person, but somehow he found out who I was and wrote a letter to my parents, who obviously didn't know I was gay,
mm-hmm.
and later on I wrote a letter to the FBI.
Wow. Well, did you disclose your identity at all, as far as what you did for work at all?
Him?
Yeah.
No, I did not. So that's, as you read the book,
yeah,
it's one of the core mysteries of the book, who this person was and what his motivation was in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
My parents didn't know. The FBI didn't know.
Right.
And that just started this whole chain of events where the FBI called me in. Confronted me. They had the letter that I'd written to him, and I denied writing the letter, which obviously was a mistake. I thought I was kind of comfortable being gay at the time, but
mm-hmm.
It was a snap decision on my part, so I denied writing the letter. They didn't come out and ask me if I was gay, but the letter would indicate that I was.
Right.
And I didn't know what they would do. I mean, I had been an agent for 19 years at the time.
Wow.
And I thought, well, maybe they would just ignore it. I had a good record, excellent record, and maybe they would just let it go. But later on, they pursued it and called me back to Washington. And at that point, I admitted that I was gay. And that started a whole series of events as you read the book.
Mm-hmm.
What happened after that?
Well, I was just wondering if you could tell the listeners, because obviously they may have not had the chance to read the book yet, which I definitely would recommend that everybody does, because like I said, it's an amazing book. And just to let the people know, the book is called A Special Agent, Gay and Inside the FBI, and it is available on Amazon, and I'll be providing a link on my website for people to be able to check it out. And it, like I said, it's an excellent book, and I was just wondering, could you go through a little bit about, like, when they talk with you about it, and for example, when you were being interrogated, it was just, what amazed me was some of the questions they asked you, and I was just, cringing as I read that book. I was just amazed.
It was pretty difficult, emotionally.
Right.
Emotionally draining, upsetting.
Exactly.
I had gone back there. I'd been called back several times. They wanted to know all the details of my personal life, my sexual life.
Right.
Wanted to know the names of other gay people that I knew. Wanted to know if they were, the names of other gay people in the FBI and all of that. And of course, I told them I wasn't going to disclose their names without these people's permission. First of all, I didn't know any gay people in the FBI. I had, of course, gay friends, but I wasn't about to tell the FBI their names. So that was a problem for them. their main concern, well, they had a lot of concerns, but their main concern was that I might have been blackmailed
right.
in the past because I was gay, maybe blackmailed by the KGB or whatever, or someone to betray the country or to give out secrets, because I, as an FBI agent, you have a top secret clearance.
Mm-hmm.
And I assured them I never had, of course. So that was one of their concerns. Obviously, they're concerned about the image of the FBI and a whole lot of issues. But so they, I went back there several times for, you know, interrogation after interrogation, polygraph after polygraph, and literally couldn't, you know, I thought I was satisfying their questions about me. I thought, well, I have an excellent record. As I told them, I said, if you were concerned about blackmail before, you don't have to worry about it anymore, because now that you know that I'm gay, how could anybody blackmail me and with a threat of revealing my homosexuality to the FBI? You're the only people that I was really concerned about. Now you know, so I'm the least blackmailable person you have. You know, I don't use drugs. I'm not in debt. I don't have any, you know, personal problems at all. So,
right.
If you want me to come out to the office, I'll be glad to do that. You know, what was interesting about that is they didn't want any of that to happen. They didn't want me to disclose it to anybody else. So, it was funny because I came out of the closet at that point to the FBI, and then they went into the closet about me, and it was a very closely held secret.
Wow.
And this process went on for maybe about almost a year, and I celebrated 20 years in the FBI, and I had gotten all kinds of awards, and I got a letter from the director and all that. And so I just assumed that they're going to let me continue working. I didn't make an issue of it. They didn't make an issue of it. So I figured, well, it's just something that's going to kind of blow over. But in September of 1989, they called me in and asked for my credentials and badge and told me I was going to be placed on administrative leave with pay while they made their decision as to what they were going to do to me.
Wow.
So, at that point, personally, I mean, this had gone on for a year. I hadn't told my family. I've got two brothers. They didn't know I was gay. My family didn't know I was gay. So I decided to tell one of my brothers, and then I went home to tell my parents that I was gay. They didn't know it. They were, you know, they were in their 70s. Born again Christians, and I wasn't quite sure how they were going to take it, but they were great about it. They said they still loved me, and they were so proud of me and that they would stand by me through whatever happened. The reason I told them is, first of all, I wanted to kind of share what was going on in my life, but I was it looked like I was going to get fired from the FBI.
Right.
And where I'm from, it's a small town, and most of the people know each other and have a lot of relatives. I knew if I got fired that the word would probably get out. And I also was thinking about filing a lawsuit against the FBI because it was just so atrocious, their discrimination, you know, against gays and lesbians. So that's why I decided to tell them. And my parents said, don't worry about it. We'll deal with the neighbors and the people in town. But I want to kind of prepare them. Because I didn't know what was going to happen, but certainly suing the FBI was an option. And one option was just waiting to get fired or resigning. I mean, those were all options. So I just decided to see what was going to happen.
Right.
So I hired an attorney, and we kind of just waited for the moves by the FBI.
Wow.
But finally, and just to fast forward, this is 89, and in June of 1990, by that time they had revoked my copy. And I knew the handwriting was on the wall. And sure enough, in June, they came out to my house and told me I was no longer on the rolls of the FBI after 21 years.
Wow. Now, did you get your full pension and everything for that?
No. Being that I was fired from the FBI, it was like I had never worked for them. And it looks bad on your record if you've been fired from the FBI.
Wow.
So, you know, people wonder, what the heck did you do? So I had been, you know, consulting with an attorney in San Francisco and all that. And when that happened, I decided to file a lawsuit against that. Which I did.
Well, before we get into that, let me ask you this question. So if you would have, let's say if when the things started to, you know, as I say, the shit started hitting the fan, and let's say that you decided at 19 or 20 years that you wanted to go ahead and retire before they had made any type of administrative thing, would you have had been able to get the pension then at that point?
No, because the problem with them, you have to be 20, you have to have 20 years in the FBI,
right,
and you have to be 50 years old. So you have to have both of those things in order to qualify. I had 21 years, but I was only 45 years old.
Oh, okay.
So,
wow.
So I would lose. I wouldn't get any retirement at all. So loss of income, no retirement, no benefits at all. So,
wow.
But you know, to be honest with you, I don't know if I was, you know, 50 years old and 20 years. I don't know if I would have. I would have retired. I don't know.
Definitely. I'm sorry. Please go on. Please go on.
No, that's okay. I guess I just come, you know, from a kind of an idealistic background, 60s, and, people standing up for what they believe in, and,
right,
you know, trying to change the world and all of that kind of stuff, you know, my heroes, or, you know, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., you know, those are the kinds of people that I admired, and, you know, you have to, at some point in your life, you have to stand up for what you believe, and so, to me, and I'm no hero, but to me, there was a moment in time when all this stuff was happening with the FBI that, you know, I could walk away from it all and just, you know, go on with my life or take a stand.
Right.
And I always tell people when people read the book or I've done some talks, I was truly an ordinary person that got caught up in an extraordinary situation.
Right.
And if you read the book, I didn't handle it very well a number of times. It was very emotional for me. I made some mistakes along the way, but you know, I decided, you know, to put my money literally where my heart was, and so that's when I decided to sue the FBI on this issue. No one had ever done it before, and the FBI had been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
No one had ever sued him for discrimination against gays and lesbians.
Right.
So,
well, why, Frank? I think you need to take credit as a hero, because I think it was an amazing thing that you did, and especially, you know, as you said, during the time frame that all this was going on, and, you know, and after, you know, dedicating your life to, you know, the country by serving it for, you know, that long of time, that I'm very proud of you for doing what you did. A lot of other people would have just said, you know, like what you said, and just give up and you know, go on with your life. But I'm really glad that you took a stand for yourself, and, you know, and as well as all the other brothers and sisters who are part of the GLBT community and want to be able to serve, you know.
Thank you, Tom. You know, I had a lot of support along the way with friends and my family support. And mm-hmm. a friend of mine said at the time, you made a contribution for 21 years as an FBI agent. You have an opportunity now to make a contribution in another way.
Yeah.
Not only to gays and lesbians and bisexual people, but also to, you know, the country and to our government and to history. So you have this opportunity. I'm glad I did it. There were times that were absolutely horrible, but looking back, I'm glad I did what I did. And I had a therapist at the time, which really helped me, and we talked about, if you walk away with it from all of this, are you going to be able to live with yourself? That, you know, you're looking back and I should have fought them. This was unfair, and I allowed them to do this to me. And come to find out later on, of course, to other gays and lesbians. So, you know, it wasn't a snap decision. I thought about it a lot. I also realized that once I took this step, I was going to become a public figure. And that was very difficult for me because as an FBI agent, it's almost like being a closeted gay man. You know, you don't reveal, you know, normally that you're an FBI agent. I had worked undercover and all that. So the similarities were both there.
Right.
So it would be a fact of I'm going public with who I am. And once you become a public figure, you're fair game for everyone looking at your life.
So right.
That was a big challenge for me, from being closeted for all those years to become, you know, an openly gay man. And I knew that the media onslaught would come because no one had ever sued it. Whoever has ever heard of a gay FBI agent. So I knew it was all going to come, and had to brace myself and prepare myself for being a public figure, which I never wanted to be.
So how did you? I mean, I know you had the motivation of wanting to, you know, obviously to stand for yourself and. You know, but I was just wondering what made you do that? What made you say, "Hey, I got to do this"?
I just think I'm one of those people, and maybe that's why I joined the FBI. I hate injustice. I mean, I worked civil rights cases and the Ku Klux Klan and all kinds of investigations in the FBI, and it's one of the reasons I joined. You know, make the country better. You know, do something about the injustice that I see and hear in my own personal life after seeing how they had treated me, that, you know, I just, it wasn't about other people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It was really about me, and it was about the FBI, and it was about injustice. And, sometimes you just have to stand up. And as it turned out, the FBI turned out to be a real bully in this thing, and I had told them along the way that if they fired me, I would, you know, consider suing them. And, you know, you're giving me a black eye by all of this, and you're going to end up with a black eye, too. You know, I hate to say it, and I really like the FBI, and I love being an FBI agent, but certainly they bullied, you know, they bullied gay people, as we found out. Force them to resign and all of that. And in the past, they were not, you know, fair toward other minorities. When I came in the FBI, there were no female agents.
Right.
You know, there were very few blacks or minorities of any kind. So it was almost like the history of each group coming along. It was 1972 after Hoover died that they allowed women to be FBI agents. There were FBI agents in the 20s that were women, and Hoover got rid of them. So there was this whole period of time that there weren't 50 years, there weren't any women. And so I just saw this as the next logical group. You know, now that they couldn't discriminate against other people, it was still okay to do it against gays and lesbians and bisexual people because it was, society was okay with that. You know, and it's the government. And the FBI concerned about their image, you know, what would people think? Gay FBI agents, I mean, what would they think of the FBI? So that was, and then my feeling was, if the FBI is, and as they said, they wanted to make the FBI diverse to represent all the people in the United States, well then, gays and lesbians and bisexuals and transgender people are certainly a part of this country, and why shouldn't we be allowed? And my point of all of this was judge a person by their ability to do their job and not by something of their personal life or whatever. It wasn't doing anything illegal. So that was kind of my thought. And we made the point along the way that there'd never been a case in American history of a gay person being blackmailed to betray the country. It had never happened. It never happened. 99% of the people that did it were heterosexual, and they did it for money.
Yep.
So, you know, this whole myth, it was a myth created, and it was perpetuated that gay people were weak people and that they would easily succumb to blackmail, and it didn't happen. There were a few gay people that betrayed the country, but they did it for money. Nobody was ever blackmailed. So it was one of those myths that we had to deal with, and the other myth was that, you know, gay people were weak and spineless people you know, couldn't be FBI agents. Well, the FBI couldn't make that argument because I had been one of their best agents for 21 years. So,
yeah,
you know, it's like all these arguments that they were trying to use based on prejudice and bigotry and all that, as time went on, that just wouldn't wash. We countered every argument that they made. One argument they made, it gets a little bit about there are sodomy laws in certain states, you know, so gay people couldn't serve in those states as FBI agents, but the sodomy laws were gender neutral, so it didn't make any difference if you were a man and a woman engaging in sodomy or whatever. So there were all these arguments that were lined up to really veil the underlying prejudice against gays and lesbians. So those are the issues that we had to attack.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, right now we're at the 30-minute mark, so what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, I'd like to go ahead and conclude this part one. But what I'd like to do is, you know, first of all, thank you very much for, you know, telling us what you told so far. I think it's wonderful information, and I really think that what you did was a brave and marvelous thing, and I really appreciate not only what you did, but also, you know, taking the time to, you know, write the book and tell us about it, because I think that's an important part of our history, and I think it's an important part of the FBI's history, and I think it's a lot of great information. So, again, I want to thank you very much for doing that. And what I'd like to also do is thank the listeners for being part of the program and also listening. And what I'd like to do is ask you to please go to my website, which is RambleRedhead.com, and make a comment about this show as well as any of the other shows that you've listened to. You can also go to my comment line where you can call. It's 574-203-4263, and I would love to be able to hear from you. And also, if you'd like to email me, you can email me at RambleRedhead@gmail.com. So again, what I'd like to do is thank Frank for being part of the program. And Frank, would you like to say goodbye to the listeners for this part?
Yes, and I wish everyone the best out there. And oftentimes people ask me, well, should I come out? And my feeling is I was kind of pushed out of the closet, but I just think everyone should come out when they feel comfortable about coming out. Thank you for having me on the show.
Okay, no problem. Well, but
hi, everybody. This is the Ramble Redhead Show. Before I end this episode, I wanted just to take a moment to thank all of my lovely listeners for taking the time to write comments on the website regarding the last couple episodes. And episode 90, I did an interview with Rob Lindley. We had a two-part interview with him. And what I'd like to do is just read some of the comments that some people had said that I thought were great. First of all, was from Troy, who said, "Sounds like Rob has really pushed through a lot of stuff fast. I'm always amazed by the bravery of folks who come out after they're married to someone of the opposite sex, because American society seems to place an extra burden of guilt on these folks, making an already complicated set of circumstances even more so." Ian wrote, "Loved it. Excellent. Glad to hear from someone else who's been married." John Q wrote, "What an interesting guy. I think I'd like to know him a lot." Without delving into stereotype, Rob does have the gay sound. It's interesting that it took him so long to come to the realization that he was gay in today's society. With teens coming out earlier and earlier, we assume that it's easier to come to terms with being gay, but isn't for everyone, obviously. I love the fact that he's worked through this and has his dog. Interesting interview. Stephen wrote, "Just discovered your podcast. I love this episode. Rob is an interesting guy, and thanks for doing the interview." And then with part two of the interview that I did with Rob, we got a few other comments, and let me go and get those up here in just a second. Casey said, "Rob is such a fascinating man, and damned, how funny, as caviar." Ooh! Anonymous also wrote, "Thanks for the show's ramble. Rob is like my number two favorite queer posse personality, so it was a real treat to hear the interviews. Great job, Mike H." And also Ian said, "Love the show, very interesting, and especially the caviar joke. We'll take a look at Rob's site." So Rob's going to get a new customer there. Our listener there, not customer. And also I'd like to thank the wonderful couple, Dwayne and Todd, again, for allowing me to come to their home and have dinner. And then also I had a great interview with them, with Dwayne. And Casey wrote, "What a great story. The children sound so adorable. I love hearing stories such as these. They give me hope." And then John Q wrote again, "What a wonderful family picture. Thanks for that. I liked this interview so much that I had to listen to it twice. Dwayne sounds like a wonderfully down-earth guy, and what a terrific story of the family next door. I think it's probably more usual than two guys growing into each other rather than having a specific experience that tells someone that this person is the one. Can't wait for the second part. I hope Dwayne tells what it, what it, what it, I can't wait for the second part. I hope Dwayne tells what it is that prompted he and Todd to make the jump to parenthood. Okay, and then on part two with the interview with Dwayne, we had the following responses. John Key wrote, another terrific interview. Dwayne seems like a put-together guy with all priorities in place. His description of the first moment when Todd comes up His description of the first moment when Todd comes up behind Dwayne with Daniel in his arms and say, hey, must have been an enormously emotional moment that crystallized everything they wanted as a family. How wonderful that Todd worked for a company that would help in the adoption process. There is some hope for our society. Cheers for all of them. Michael wrote, great interviews as always, Tom. Enjoyed it very much. And then Casey wrote, talking about starting a family fills me with hope that I may do the same. Says, well, I have to find my husband first, but that will come when it's time. Great interviews. I'd also like to take a moment to say hello to someone who's a new listener to the show, and his name is Joe, and he's a great new friend. And I just want to say, Joe, I really have enjoyed talking with you and spending some time with you, and I really look forward to the future. So everyone else, I'd like to thank you for being a big part of the Ramble Redhead Show, and I hope you keep on listening. And please email me at rambleredhead@gmail.com, and I'd love to hear your comments, your suggestions, and anything else you'd like to share. So take care and have a most wonderful day. Bye-bye.